A column published on Friday by noted National Catholic reporter and CNN correspondent John Allen has taken the media to task for misconstruing several aspects of the Vatican's response to the clerical sexual abuse crisis. Charles Collins spoke to Mr. Allen and asked him about the media response.
Well, in principle, I think there's nothing wrong, and in fact, I think it's entirely legitimate to raise questions about the Pope's record. I mean, look, the practical reality is the Catholic Church has had to learn the painful lesson in recent years that in the past we did not always handle these cases particularly well. And pretending that that's not the case doesn't help us. It doesn't help us in terms of being able to pick up the pieces internally, and it certainly doesn't help us in the court of public opinion. And if that applies to the Church writ large, it may well, in a handful of cases, also apply to the Pope himself. But having said that, I also think that's no excuse for sloppiness or mischaracterization in describing the Pope's record, because the truth of this is that while there may be a few instances in the distant past in which the reaction was not as aggressive as we might have liked, Pope Benedict XVI also has been, in many ways, a real reformer on the sex abuse issue. I mean, that is to say, he, as Pope, has embraced the zero-tolerance policy on abuse. He is the first Pope to meet with victims. He has more or less broken the Vatican's wall of silence on this issue. He has disciplined a couple of very high-profile priests, sending the clear message that no one's going to get a free pass on this issue. And I think, unfortunately, a lot of that gets left out of the picture when the focus is exclusively on one or another case that was not handled as well as it might have been.
A lot of the media attention right now has been on his role as the prefect of the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith. And you recently said that this role has been not dealt with clearly. Can you tell us what his role was while he was prefect and how that changed over time?
Sure. Well, then Cardinal Ratzinger, now Pope Benedict, was appointed to the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith in November of 81, although he didn't actually take over until early 82. But from early 82 through 2005, he was obviously the head of that office. So that's all basically a quarter century. And in some reporting, it's been suggested that he was therefore the Vatican's point man for sex abuse for that entire span of time. And that simply is not accurate. Prior to 2001, the truth of it is that most allegations of sexual abuse against a priest never got to Rome at all. They were handled or mishandled, as the case may be, on the local level, that is, by diocesan bishops or by religious superiors. It was only in 2001 that John Paul II issued a legal document which directed the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith to review these cases. And from 2001 forward, I think the evidence shows that once Cardinal Ratzinger and his staff really got their hands around the case files, they became a sort of Catholic version of Eliot Ness. I mean, they became, in effect, almost crusaders attempting to clean up this mess. Now, prior to 2001, there were a few exceedingly rare cases where an allegation would come to Cardinal Ratzinger's attention, and this is because the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith has within it a tribunal, that is a court, that handles offenses against the sacraments, including the sacrament of penance, and there are a limited number of cases in which the sexual abuse in question occurred within the context of the confessional. And that, of course, is the case, for example, of Father Lawrence Murphy in Milwaukee, who was at the heart of the recent revelations in the New York Times. But to pretend that for almost 25 years, Ratzinger was overseeing the crisis of sexual abuse simply isn't accurate. He didn't get any real responsibility for this until 2001, that is 4 years before his election as Pope. And I think what the record would show is that after 2001, he became in many ways the leading voice at senior levels of the Church for taking the crisis seriously.
Let's go back to Father Lawrence Murphy, one of these cases that did come to his attention back in 1996. This is a priest who molested many children between the 1950s and the 1970s, not just children, but deaf children. His case did go to the CDF. There have been complaints that he wasn't defrocked. There's a lot of anger out there about that. Why wasn't he defrocked?
Well, first of all, I think we have to get the timeline here correct. The abuse you're talking about, which is obviously god awful, and one could almost use the word diabolical to describe it, occurred from the 50s through the 70s. And the young hearing impaired persons who suffered this abuse apparently tried to tell everyone under the sun, church officials, cops, the district attorney, reporters, and really no one took them seriously. So this is a failure all across the board. Now, as you say, the case did not come to the attention of the Congregation for the Faith until 1996. Murphy died a few months later in early 1998, so even if the Congregation for the Faith had decided on the first day they received the correspondence to begin a canonical process, it's highly unlikely it actually would have reached its end before Murphy died. We don't know exactly how involved Cardinal Ratzinger was in the deliberation. We do know that there was a letter to Cardinal Ratzinger from Father Murphy, basically asking them not to go forward, first because of his ill health and also because the statute of limitations in canon law had already expired. Apparently, a decision was made that simply removing, because the priest in question was already out of ministry, apparently a decision was made in light of his health and the fact that he wasn't ministering anymore, that was sufficient and that a full canonical process wasn't warranted. In hindsight, obviously, a more aggressive response to that case probably would have been desirable, but on the other hand, I think it is unfair to suggest the Pope is somehow uniquely culpable. I mean, this is a case in which absolutely everyone dropped the ball, and Ratzinger obviously didn't get involved until terribly late in the game.
Is there a difference between how, for example, Americans and Europeans would view a case like this as far as a sick or dying defendant? Often in Europe, that weighs a little bit more than it would in the United States. Is that the case?
I think that probably has been the case up to now. I think the most significant difference probably is that the United States lived through the peak period of the sexual abuse crisis almost a decade ago, 2002-2003. It is really arriving in Europe only now. Therefore, I think the sensibility to the whole issue of sexual abuse by priests and the kind of swift and sure justice that requires that is already now conventional wisdom in the United States is really only now arriving in Europe. And therefore, there is always the danger of judging how these cases were handled in the past by today's standards. But I think the bottom line on the Murphy case is that this was a comprehensive failure by absolutely everyone involved. And while it is certainly regrettable, perhaps, the way it was handled in the Congregation for the Faith, they were merely the last item in a long series of failures. And actually, I think their culpability, so to speak, is probably the least of all the parties involved. The danger in one of these stories is that once the drumbeat of critical attention to the Pope's record takes hold, cases in which his involvement is really only marginal and arguably defensible by the standards of the time, get blown up into something more than they are.
As a final question, what now? What is the way forward in a way that's both fair to the Pope and to the Church, but also does take this clerical sexual abuse crisis seriously?
Well, I think there have to be two components. I mean, one is I think the Vatican and the spokespersons for the Holy Father do have to insist on attention to the positive dimension of his record on this issue, because he really has been a leader in terms of reforms on sexual abuse. But at the same time, I think they also have to commit themselves to a policy of full transparency about the past. I think that the truth is that, at least in the court of public opinion, pointing fingers at the media and complaining of an attack to wound the Pope, even if there may be some merit to that, frankly, is not particularly helpful. It's just going to come off as sort of denial and circling the wagons. I think a more constructive approach would be to say that we, too, want to sort through the Pope's record and everyone in the leadership in the Church, everyone's record on this issue, to find out what went wrong and what we need to fix, that we're as interested in establishing the truth as everyone else is, in fact, even more so, because this is our Church, and we are committed to making sure that it's a Church in which this sort of behavior simply isn't tolerated. I think if that's the tone that's set, one of transparency and commitment to reform, then I think you can begin to talk about turning a corner.